If you've ever been up late at night, unable to sleep, clicking through all the channels on your TV, you might have caught a glimpse of Wilma Flintstone on the witness stand, or Shaggy and Scooby-Doo being busted for possession, or a talking milkshake, carton of French fries, and a wad of raw meat living in a suburban New Jersey home. Don't worry, you haven't gone crazy. It's just Cartoon Network's late-night programming, Adult Swim. Ted Turner launched Cartoon Network in 1992 after he bought Hanna-Barbera, the animation factory that churned out shows such as Tom and Jerry, Scooby-Doo, Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear, The Smurfs, and The Flintstones. In the beginning, Cartoon Network aired these oldies 24 hours a day, but soon the staff was itching to create some original productions. The problem was, there was no money. Mike Lazo is the senior executive in charge of adult programming for Cartoon Network. He co-created their first original show, Space Ghost Coast to Coast, which went on the air in 1994.
Hanna-Barbera formed probably the quintessential TV viewing experience for myself and for the programmers that I worked with at that time. It was our Saturday mornings that were replaying every single day. We would sit around and watch these. We soon realized that there were probably 20 permutations of Scooby-Doo. Just like television today, if something was popular, they would just make it over and over and over again in seemingly more ridiculous fashion each time. And so many of these cartoons weren't exactly gold, but we thought we could have fun with some of them. And so eventually that's what we started doing, mainly out of necessity. Every afternoon around 3 o'clock, we would get together for a programming meeting. And this just happened to be around the time we would show action cartoons, Space Ghost, early Birdman, Dino Boy, the Fantastic Four. And so these cartoons would be playing as we were talking about how could we program to have fun, to do different stunts the audience would enjoy. And it just seemed like Gary Owen's big Space Ghost voice was always booming out of one of our offices, which would amuse us. And at the same time, the late night wars were going on with Jay Leno and David Letterman. And we said, you know, we ought to introduce Gary Owens. We ought to introduce Space Ghosts into the late night wars, just as a joke. And somehow that stuck. And we ended up actually trying to bring that to fruition.
Now, Space Ghosts, for people who don't remember it, the original cartoon, what was that?
Well, a very odd cartoon from 1966. You know, the superhero genre had tried almost everything. And in this particular case, they decided the superhero would literally, his power would be able to become invisible, a ghost. And when I was 8 years old, when the cartoon came out, this to me was the most exciting thrilling action adventure I'd ever seen. When I was in my early 30s at the Cartoon Network, it was a bit silly, so to speak.
Now, for listeners who don't know the Cartoon Network version of Space Ghost, why don't you explain the high concept?
Well, we knew that we could go in and reanimate, revoice over any cartoon character in our library. We own those cartoons. So talk shows were in vogue at the time. We felt like that, you know, that would be fairly inexpensive way to repurpose a character. We had CNN right down the road that we could use interviews, that they had already, done, and we could,
you mean with celebrities?
That's correct. Uh-huh. Which in essence, we could just splice together. We could splice together this caped crusader asking these ridiculous questions of celebrities, and we just thought that was silly enough to be interesting.
Silly enough to be interesting. What I love,
at least to ourselves.
Space Ghost, he wears his whole suit. He's there interviewing the animated character is interviewing real celebrities on a video monitor. He's got the white muscle suit and the yellow cape and that black hood. What is that superhero Dickie, or what do you call those things that cover the whole
a
head?
A cowl.
The cowl.
That's right. That's in superheroism, that would be the cowl. You know, the interesting thing is in the earliest days, we couldn't get anybody really to come on the show. we would call and explain, well, we're going to have you interviewed by Space Ghost, a 1966 cartoon. And they would say, no thanks. So we rapidly just started going to almost anybody. And we ended up with what you would call, you know, C-list celebrities. And we found out that that was actually more fun than dealing with the, you know, the five or six agents and publicists and whoever else to try and get somebody that you might have heard on.
Well,
we had people on the show I'd never even heard of.
Well, let's listen to a clip. Donny Osmond is Space Ghost's guest on this show.
How did you get this show? Did you audition for this or something? I'm kidding. I'll be nice. I'll be kind.
So, besides those teeth, what superpowers do you have?
Everybody said I can sing well.
Do it! Do you like croutons?
Nuts?
Croutons.
No. Grapes, they're better.
Better for idiots. Does Marie eat grapes?
Why don't you get Marie on the show? Let her.
Yeah, ask. Why don't we get Marie on the show? Baltar, I want Marie. Call her agent.
A clip from the Cartoon Network series Space Ghost Coast to Coast. Donny Osmond in this clip, he really seems to know what was going on. How did you prep him for the interview?
Well, you can try and prep these guests, but they're really never quite prepared for a disembodied voice asking them ridiculous questions that have to do with space. They either get it and have a pretty good sense of humor about it, or they are just baffled.
Space Ghost asks questions like, do you have enough oxygen? And what is your secret identity?
The some of the videotape, which we quite often used, the guest just looks like a deer caught in headlights. They're just flummoxed by the approach. And we, of course, milk that for everything it's worth.
Who were the guests who didn't get it, and how did they react?
Well, I would have to say at least half of the guests really have just not gotten it. They've been told by a publicist or an agent, hey, it's a fun little show, go do it. Or perhaps, they just, for the experience, decide to do it. But I'd say a good half just don't simply understand what they're in for. Those are always our favorite interviews. I think Willie Nelson was someone who just stared at us like we had come directly from Mars. And we've now used his interview three times.
so that reaction, staring as if you come from Mars, is what makes Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
We prefer that.
A success.
We prefer awkwardness. You know, we're huge television fans, and we've seen television just be so pat and so edited until there's no air to breathe. And what we like to do is break it down and to put in awkwardness and moments that may make you feel uncomfortable.
Explain for us the function of Zorak and Moltar on Space Ghost Coast to Coast. That's his band leader and, what, his director?
That's correct. Yeah, Zorak is the band leader, just as, Doc Severson for Carson and Paul Schaefer for Letterman. We just took that to a different level when we said, you know, these band leaders love and joke around with the talk show host. What if we had a band leader that just despised the host? And so Zorak gives us, you know, the tension and the comic aspect of a band leader who just simply doesn't like the talk show host. Moltar, for years, we didn't know what to do with Moltar. He just kind of stood there. In fact, we had a standing bed. I had a $5 bill taped to the wall for any funny Moltar lines. I don't think anybody took the $5 until the third season of that show. But, you know, you need the comedy rule of threes. You need three characters, at least.
Zorak is a praying mantis, which you neglected to mention.
And
Moltar, I don't know what he is. He's kind of a Star Wars type creature.
Moltar is a lava man. Inside his heat-resistant suit is just molten lava. And, I mean, this is the wonderful freeing aspect of cartoons. Your characters can be anything. So you can have a giant mantis, a giant bug playing keyboards, and a lava man as a television director. And I think that's just the strength and power of animation. You can go anywhere with it, even to outer space, to interview celebrities.
Aren't they being held prisoner by Space Ghost?
They are, but we think by this time they're just hanging out because they don't have anything else better to do.
It's become much more congenial
season after season. Well, you know, it is. It's almost a little pathetic. Now Space Ghost wants to hang out with Zorak because he thinks he's cool, but Zorak won't have any of it.
There's a certain mirroring of reality there.
Well, I mean, in the last two seasons, they've gone to each other's apartments. Space Ghost has begged Zorak to let him hang out. And, you know, over the years, it's become a little less, combative. I don't think Space Ghost has blown Zorak up once in the new season. He just wants to go hang out with him and go to restaurants. But Zorak, of course, thinks it would be completely uncool to be seen with Space Ghost. And it would be.
I want to talk about Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law. And this is another of the Adult Swim offerings. It features an obscure Hanna-Barbera superhero from the 60s, Birdman. And he was a masked crusader with white wings. But now he wears a suit, and he's a token superhero lawyer, superhero slash lawyer, who defends cartoon characters like Fred Flintstone and Scooby-Doo in court. It's kind of like a Looney Tunes Law and Order. was that the concept?
Well, yes. Perry Mason, I think, was the first thing we all said.
Perry Mason with wings.
Perry Mason with wings, correct. You know, Birdman was out at the exact same time as Space Ghost. They were kind of equals, so to speak. Birdman, perhaps a little more pathetic with the wings, and getting the power from the sun. But they both were Hanna-Barbera superheroes in the mid-60s. And after Space Ghost had done well for the network, I mean, why not a lawyer? We had reached a place at the network where, you know, these characters were real to us. If Space Ghost could be a talk show host, then certainly cartoon characters perhaps needed legal representation. And what better for that than someone with wings?
Well, let's play a clip from Harvey Birdman. This is from the episode called Dabadon, and it's a parody of The Sopranos, starring Fred Flintstone as a mob don. I've got to say, it opens with a hilarious mock Sopranos theme song sequence. You want to say anything about the making of this episode before we air the clip?
Well, it was actually quite a struggle because, you know, Sopranos was very popular, still is, obviously. And to take such a serious show and turn it into a cartoon, you know, The Sopranos is HBO, and HBO is part of Time Warner. So we had some questions to answer when that episode was produced.
Like what?
They were concerned that we would make too much light of a serious show, and whether or not it was appropriate to parody it in cartoon form. But once they saw the episode, they said, "This is wonderful. By all means, finish producing this episode." So they were big supporters. But you know, it was a property that was still on the air, and some people don't like what we do with reality and unreality. But in this case, they loved it.
So they didn't have any problem with you transposing the Bada Bing into the Dabadoo strip club?
No, actually, they laughed as we did. I mean, the open of that show is so wonderful. How could you not like The Sopranos more after you had seen that? And, you know, there's all kind of things going on there. I think my favorite moment is when Quick Draw's head is in the bed, which is straight out of The Godfather. So there were a lot of influences that informed that show and all of these shows.
Let's listen to a clip. In this scene, Harvey Birdman, attorney at law, is cross-examining Fred Flintstone, who's on trial for crimes committed as a mob boss.
I'm just a regular working guy.
What do you do?
Build materials, stone, gravel, cement, that kind of thing.
Hello?
Now, your wife... Your wife thinks you're into organized crime with the money and jewels and the beautiful stone furniture.
My wife. Hey, what's she know? She knows nothing about the business. Nothing.
All right. Well, I think that about covers it.
She's supposed to be in the kitchen all day. You see shoes on her? No.
That's fine.
What's a wife know about the things we men do, huh?
Nothing further.
Enough with a wife. Give her me agita.
Yeah, I think this episode has my favorite line in it, which is, "You're dead to me, can opener," when he's yelling at the bird.
Yeah, I love that. The bird rats on Fred all over the place.
It's just the greatest scene. I mean, that's another thing. You know, you watch the Flintstones, you always love the inventions, and now here is a new context in which you're seeing that, and you're bringing this hit show, The Sopranos, into that context. I just think it's a great crashing of worlds.
I have to ask you about C-Lab 2021, and this is a parody of a show I remember, C-Lab 2020, and that really rivaled Scooby-Doo, I thought, in the 70s for the worst thing on television. I mean, whole minutes would go by and not a single character would move. What was the story with animation in that decade? Some of it was such schlock.
Well, it's very true. You know, there are so many shows in which animation, there is no animation. They just stand there. But, you know, at that time in the 60s, 60s and 70s, you know, animation was such a machine. The networks needed new shows every fall, and they didn't much care what they were. Just give us five of them now. So any show would just be kind of machined out of a studio. And the budgets were obviously quite small on these. C-Lab happened to be one of those, C-Lab 2020, which is set in the future, but remarkably felt like to us it had been set 30 years in the past. You know, people living undersea, oh my golly, how futuristic. So the producers came to us and they said, this is about the dumbest thing we've ever seen. We would love to repurpose it, and we think it'll cost about $20 to do that, since there's no animation that actually moves in the show. And we said, sounds great.
You make some of these cartoons, all of them really, on such a shoestring budget. How does that influence how you produce them? And is it a case of necessity as the mother of invention? Is it freeing in a way?
Well, yes, I believe not having very much in the way of resources is freeing. In the earliest days with Space Ghost, we simply didn't have a choice. We had very little money to make new programming, and that's obviously reflected in the production.
Did that come down from Ted Turner himself?
Did he say, it did.
Look, boys.
In fact,
we
went to Ted a year after the network started, and we said, can we have new money to make new programming because we're tired of being labeled as a Hanna-Barbera rerun channel? And he said, get out of my office. You have all you need for a while. Start making some money, then I'll give you some money.
He sounds like a dad.
It was very much what you would hear from a parent. And so we kind of went back with our tail between our legs and said, you know, we can do things inexpensively if we think about them. And so Space Ghost literally came out of two half-inch machines, an old cartoon, and a CNN interview. I mean, we made a pilot for that show in 30 minutes, for the cost of a Radio Shack microphone. But we discovered something in the process. And what that was that if you had very limited resources, very often you had to be very creative and look at things in a new light. And we thought that was more interesting in many ways than just throwing a lot of money at a situation. And to this day, even though we have far more resources, we're informed by that philosophy. We think it's a good one.
Mike Lazo is the Senior Vice President responsible for Cartoon Network's Adult Swim and co-creator of the animated series Space Ghost Coast to Coast. A DVD of the first few seasons of Space Ghost Coast to Coast will be in stores next week.